previously the FETC lecturers were in the jurisdiction of the council. However, the act was amended to level. Provinces are continuing to perform better than national, mainly because there were no tensions at a provincial level. The relations amongst parties were good. The problem was only at national. And as such, Chairperson, we have already bragged about the collective agreement that we concluded in the Eastern Cape, which saw for the first time labor peace prevailing in that province at the reopening of the schools, because we know that every year that province was characterized by strikes on the same issue, the appointment of temporal educators. And since 2003, they have never dealt with the redeployment of educators declared in excess. But for the first time, through the facilitation this year, they addressed those issues and there was no strike in the Eastern Cape, which is an achievement that can be recorded. KZN?
So that we don't come back to that, we can, but just clarify us as we move forward. Where do we draw a line between national and provinces? You know, explain to us what has happened in the East, what is happening, and, you know, it's better in the provinces than you. How do we draw that line?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, the difference between national has to formulate policies. Once national in policies in the context of the ELRC is in the form of a collective agreement on these issues that are of mutual interest between the two parties. Once that has been done, at a provincial level, they have to deal with the implementation of such a collective agreement. Now, in this case, the issue around the appointment of temporal teachers and the redeployment of those that are declared in excess is something that will affect the provincial level more than national, because educators are employed at the provincial level. National does not have educators. So when we say there was a bad relationship at national to such that our targets could not be met, and in the Eastern Cape we are citing that we were able to make a difference, that difference was not through the intervention of national ELRC, but it was through the intervention of the chairperson of the ELRC and the general secretary. Parties at national were not involved. So that is the facilitation that we provided there. The same as in other provinces, there was no tension there. Parties would have meetings and they would conclude on matters that they've placed on the agenda, unlike at a national level where you would not have either you would not have a meeting, or if there is a meeting, there is no outcome that is positive, because there are these underlying tensions that are playing themselves out in us achieving that which is a set objective for the council. But as I said earlier on, Chairperson, we have seen an improvement, and even at national level, the chairperson has been involved in the facilitation, and now things have started stabilizing. And to such an extent, we have a meeting that is scheduled for next week, and we're hoping that in that meeting, without committing anyone, the popular or the famous quality management system will finally be signed. And I'm raising that chairperson to prevent any question on that matter, but I'm not stopping your committee from asking, because I know that's one area that's very close to the hearts of your committee members. May I proceed, Chairperson? Chair, we have identified those areas of underperformance, and we're saying that we're committed in addressing them in the 14-15 financial year, because we all have an obligation of ensuring that we improve the quality of learning and teaching in our public schools. Chair, we're moving to the provincial. This is just an analysis of what has transpired in the provincial chambers. We had identified employee wellness, we planned 8 targets, and all our provinces achieved such. The issue around post-provisioning, we had identified that there must be a consolidated report that assures us that consultation had taken place, and as such, 8 provinces achieved, with the exception of Limpopo. Limpopo did not necessarily not achieve, but because they had a collective agreement, which was a multi-term, which simply meant that there was no need for them to engage in consultation as they were implementing the agreement. The issue around the IQMS and PMDS, 90% there we have achieved in 8 provinces with the exception of KZN. Temporal educators, all 9 provinces have achieved. Incentive for educators, 7 provinces have achieved with the exception of Gauteng and Mpumalanga. Then, Chairperson, I move to administration. There we're putting the purpose that it is to provide support to the core operational functions of the council to ensure that it delivers an efficient, effective service on its mandate. There, Chair, our strategic objective is to maintain and improve financial administrative system, procure goods and services within the policies, maintain good labor relations, train and develop staff, ensure healthy and safe work environment, and maintain and improve the premises and security system. We are reporting there, Chair, that as part of improving, we have had our finance policy, the revised one, being improved by our executive committee. We have also put in place the improved information technology and communication systems, and we have also adopted new marketing strategies to create awareness of the council and its services. The areas of underperformance, we are indicating there that we continue to solicit the assistance of the Auditor General and the Tax Ombudsman with regards to the SARS query. This may have been reported in the annual report itself, Chairperson. We had an amount of about 1.8 million deducted from our account by SARS without any paperwork. So this is one area that we have been soliciting the assistance of the AG to try and get the money refunded. However, Chair, we can report that to date, a week ago, we received a refund of 982 with a difference still being investigated by SARS. The issue around the SAM unit, I had already reported that we have established the SAM unit, but however, at the time of preparing the report, which was 31st March, we were still in the process of recruiting the manager, but to date we have the supply chain manager. The issue on labor relations, the union is yet to sign the recognition agreement so as to ensure that staff is organized. Chair, the table shows the strategic objectives, the planned targets, and the outcome. As you will see that on the first one, we have not had any adverse impact on the operations. The procurement of goods, we haven't had any disruptions there. The labor relations, we have not had any labor unrest amongst the staff. Training and development, we continue providing such, and we have done the work study that has shown us which areas needs to be developed. The health and safety work environment, we're reporting that we had only one IOD for the under review. Then the issue around information systems, we have not had any interruptions to the system. The capital expenditure, we've put the purpose of such and the strategic objective. And then, Chair, what we had identified under capital expenditure was the refurbishment of our building, which we are reporting that as at 31 March, there was no progress in that regard because we were awaiting the approval of the appointment of the project manager. But to date, we can report to Parliament that we had issued out a tender on the 3rd of October, which will be closing in the first week of November for the work that is to be done. So hopefully by the time we do the report for the current year, they would be reporting that there's been some significant progress in that regard. Chair, this talks to what I've just explained, that what was planned was the refurbishment of the building itself, which we are reporting that it has not been achieved due to the fact that the work on the building refurbishment is yet to commence. I thank you, Chair. Now we have the annual financial statements. So to you, I am not sure if the senior manager is ready or can we get, are you ready? Or through your permission, Chairperson, I pause there.
Hey, CEO, why is she still there? Where is the CFO?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, we reported the last time that our CFO retired in March of the current year. So we had advertised after he had left, but we were unable to get the response for a suitable candidate. And as such, the executive committee decided that we should re-advertise the post. And after having re-advertised, we were able to attract suitable candidates. As a result, with effect from the 1st November, we will be joined by the new CFO for the organization.
Thank you. We needed that explanation. Then let us give to the senior manager where the chairperson will do his opening remarks.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members of the Committee, for the opportunity to come and present the annual financial statements of the ELRC for the year ending 31 March 2014. Before I start with the presentation, I would just like to apologize for the late arrival. We had technical problems at the airport with the chairperson, but we are really happy that we could finally make it to this meeting. Now, without wasting any time, I will move to the first slide of my presentation. The report of the Auditor General to Parliament is on page 91 of our annual report. In terms of their opinion, after having conducted the audit in accordance with the Public Audit Act of South Africa, Act No. 25 of 2004, the general notice issued thereof, and international standards of auditing, the AG has stated that the financial statements fairly present in all material respects the financial position, its financial performance and cash flows of the year ended 31st of March 2014, in accordance with SA standards of GRAP, generally recognized accounting practice, and the requirements of the PFMA. In short, the ELRC received an unqualified audit opinion. Council was further commended for the improvements on internal controls relating to the preparation of financial statements compared to the previous years. Council does recognize and appreciate the report of the Auditor General and their recommendations, as material misstatements identified by the Auditor General were subsequently corrected and supporting documentation thereof provided and accepted by the Auditor General. Challenges around predetermined objectives were also discussed thoroughly with the AG. Recommendations were factored into the annual performance plan of the 2015-16 financial year. Financial statements on the financial position, performance, changes in net assets, cash flows, and policies are reflected from page 94 of our annual report. They have indeed been prepared in accordance with the GRAP, as indicated in the report of the Auditor General. Financial statements have been prepared on an accrual basis of accounting in accordance with historical cost convention as the basis of measurement presented in South African rands, and accounting policies are consistent with the previous period. In terms of the ability to pay short-term debt liquidity, the ELRC is in a safe margin, covering its short-term liabilities 2.58 times. Compared to the previous year, the increase is 0.42. As indicated in note 20 of the notes to the financial statements on the Council's going concern, the ELRC has the ability to survive in the long term. Financial processes are continually reviewed and monitored to avoid insolvency and to remain solvent. Notes to the financial position give more information on the types and different kinds of assets and liabilities of the ELRC. A summary of the trends in financial performance is reflected on this slide. From 2011-12 financial year up until 2013-14 financial year, which is the year under review, total income has remained constant over the past 3 years. As we are aware, the main source of income for the council is levy income, 5 rands from the employer and 5 rands employee. In the long run, the fixed levy income will pose a challenge to the council in terms of meeting its financial obligations. A detailed statement of financial performance is reflected on page 112 of our annual report. Compared to the 2012-13 financial year, expenditure increased by 6%, after suffering a decrease of 8% from 2011-12 to the 2012-13 financial year. In line with Section 53.3 of the PFMA, the ELRC has obtained approval from National Treasury to retain the surpluses of the past 3 years, which are, we are seeing there as 6, 10, and 8 in this in the latest year under review. In terms of levies, the slide reflects the number of educators contributing levy income to the ELRC. Number of contributors has remained more or less constant compared to the previous financial year. In terms of expenditure against the budget by program, the ELRC has underspent in all programs. The projected slide is in line with note number 23 of reconciliation between budget and statement of financial performance. A common and significant factor in all programs of under expenditure is due to 26 vacant positions as reported in the annual report. However, in the first quarter of the current financial year, which is the 2014-15, most of the vacancies were filled by the council. This has had a positive and significant impact on operations and the budget allocated for salaries. As at the end of September 2014, which would be the end of the second quarter this year, the council has only 7 vacancies, of which 2 will be filled in the month of November 2014. One is the one that was just reported on by the General Secretary, which is the CFO. Council focused and eliminated irregular expenditure from 1.5 million rands in the 2012-13 financial year to 0 in the year under review. Protest and wasteful expenditure also decreased by 14%. In conclusion, Chair, the ELRC remains committed in addressing challenges identified by the Auditor General, continuously reviewing its internal controls and policies, and complying with the relevant legislation in producing a useful set of financial statements for better or improved decision making. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Secretary General. Can you wrap up?
Thank you, Chair. I thought that I would save the last slide before my chairperson.
Chairperson, can I hand over to you?
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members of this committee. Again, our apologies for arriving late, but it always gives us great pleasure to come before this this committee, and that's because one of our core values at the ELRC is, in fact, accountability. Without going back and giving a summary of what has been presented, but as everyone would know, that our core pillars are collective bargaining and dispute resolution, and most of the services that we touch on are merely support services. The General Secretary quickly mentioned the challenges in the relationship between the parties that we've had, which impacted badly on our collective bargaining. But we certainly think that we at a point where we have turned the corner and things are starting to look much, much better. And in terms of dispute resolution, clearly you would have noted the high achievements in the resolution of disputes. The turnaround time for disputes that are referred has improved. And we also have a dispute prevention strategy which includes the professional development that the General Secretary was talking about. But in summary, Honorable Chair, We are certainly of the view that the organization is stable, both financially and in terms of achieving its own objectives. The Honorable Minister of Education asked for a year without any industrial action, and this is where we fit in, and we have certainly delivered on the request, and we continue to ensure that there is labor peace in education. Thank you, sir, and thank you to the Honorable Members.
Okay, thank you very much. I wanted to congratulate you before the at the beginning of the meeting, but let me do it now because we're still waiting to hear what you are saying to us. But really, it would be proper for us to congratulate the entity for its unqualified audit, though those matters of emphasis still raise concerns, but at least we are seeing the improvement on the way the entity is being managed. But again, to add on the request that the minister gave you, as a committee, again, we are requesting that let us not have a year without industrial without strikes or whatever. Let us have years now, you know. Yes, we have achieved it last year, though we saw a little bit of some disturbances, but let us say together here today you are saying let us strive for the system where you don't have any industrial actions, and as we have proven yourself last year, let us hope that you can still continue to do the same. But anyway, really, we need to that's LRC, it's fine, we need to congratulate you and commend you on what you have done. Honourable members, let me open up the opportunity for you to engage with the presentation. Can I just note hands if ever there are issues where you want to be clarified or comments that you want to make? Let us start with Honourable Lovemore. That Honourable is having a long name. Whenever I have to, I have to say it. Let me just skip that part. Yeah, Honourable. Let me end with Honourable Mashabele. The other part really it's too long for me. Honourable Mashabele, Honourable Khosa. Oh, we've got three. As of now, in that order, please.
Thank you very much. Is this working? I don't think so. Not yet. It might have been working. Was it?
That at least looks like it's working. I want a red light. Chair, yes, thank you for the presentation. I still am at odds with you about the definition of labour peace. I don't believe that we had a year that was peaceful. I mean, we had labour action. We had action in the streets outside Parliament by statute. They marched. And that was after weeks of work to rule, etc. So I differ from you, but nevertheless, we'll have to agree. We'll have to agree for now. Sure. No, I'm not opening it now. But of course, I had to say so. Chairperson, I'm really asking questions of clarity. When, for instance, we look at the goals, I think it's on page slide 22. Look at the various goals where they, for instance, with collective bargaining, conclude bargaining on identified matters of mutual interest. In public education, the plan target was 8 out of 11, and the actual achievement was 5 out of 11. But if there are not 8 matters, well, I don't quite know how those targets work. I don't understand that target. If there are not 8 matters that are of mutual interest that require collective bargaining during the year, how do you get to that number in the first place? I mean, you are now measuring yourself and saying you didn't achieve it. But was it just a thumbs up figure, or did you actually identify these are the probable issues, and we get to 11, and we must try and collectively bargain on 8 of them? I don't understand how you got to those, how you got to those figures, and how you measure the outcome. And linked to that, the statement was made, and it's a concerning statement. The statement was made that the challenging relationship between the parties, and I presume it's between SATU and DBE, I don't know who the parties are, so I'd like to question who the parties, which parties those are. The challenging relationship between the parties has impacted badly on collective bargaining over the year. Can we have additional information on that statement, to clarify that statement, please? The monitoring of implementation of collective agreements. I understand that there weren't new collective agreements, but there certainly are older collective agreements. Why are they not monitored? Why is the implementation not monitored? One of the things that always is a bugbear for me is the hours spent on professional development. It's part of a collective agreement, to the best of my knowledge, and it certainly is monitored. Chair, I just want to go to some figures quickly on page 112 of the annual report. There are some interesting figures where we've got very big increases. For instance, consulting fees went up from 122,000 to 670,000. Expenditure on World Teachers Day went up from 2,500 to suddenly 1,000,000. I think those are the two most concerning. If we could just have some explanation of that, particularly World Teachers Day. What do we spend 1,000,000 on? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to go to page 48 of the annual report. The issue of IQMS in Limpopo. Out of 52,408 educators, 50,042 were evaluated. In terms of IQMS, it is compulsory for all educators to be evaluated. Then what is the explanation of the 5% which was not evaluated? And the second question, Chair, is in terms of PMDS on page 48. When will the scores for 2013-14 financial year be tabled? Because it is clear there that scores have not been tabled. And again, lastly, PMDS, it seems as if it is a general problem with all provinces. Let's go to page... the last one is page 34, the issue of PMDS in the Eastern Cape. Out of 1,524 educators, 336 educators were evaluated. What is the explanation of 336 educators, of 88%, which was not evaluated. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, I just want to commend them for the unqualified report, but to further encourage them to get a clean audit, because that is what I think everybody is striving for. Then I just need a clarity, Chairperson. When council is proposing to be delisted, to my take is that you need independence. When you need independence, it's like on the other way you are proposing to address revenue. I don't get it there, because to address revenue, and when I look at the end of your financial statement that you also have surpluses, I don't understand what is this surplus? When you want to address revenue, do you want to reduce the funding that you're receiving, or is to add? Thank you, Chair.
As you have mentioned on page 11, that politics practice and that is one of your focus areas, which is also insanity and is an even this kind of educator. Is it possible for you just to give us clarity? How do you manage incentives that are supposed to be given to educators? And I understand if you dwell the temporal educators, I don't know whether you place them, but what I would like to know, do you mean now for temporal educators, like you have completed all the backlog that you get on temporal educators? I was also touched by this slide, and I didn't understand the slide on page 28, the one that is having a 5 out of 11, because from all your targets, most things you achieve, not achieve. Only the one where you achieve 5 out of 11. I don't know if you didn't achieve. Do you regard that as a good labor relation work that you have done? On collective bargaining, collective agreement, how do you address an issue where you think to implement your agreement, like the SOT or educators, which never materialized as it was agreed to, and the educators were only asked? Is that why we are paying after 3 years,
Chairperson, thank you. Good afternoon. Thanks for the presentation, ELRC. I also want to join the members in congratulating the good effort towards the clean audit, Chairperson. I wanted to check with the ELRC on this allegation
that ELRC has been able to achieve a lot of, resolve a lot of cases under collective bargaining that were mainly administrative instead of core issues, particularly the one on the QMS has been raised as one area where the area of weakness for ELRC, wherein that has been on the agenda for more than 3 years. I would also want to raise a question on the issue, because I know that most of the time you have to work with issues that borders on the work of the unions, and sometimes you find opposition. I wanted to check, how are you trying to manage the relationship, your relationship with the unions, whether there is this intergovernmental or inter-organizational relations strategy that you have developed that will assist you to make sure that not only are you are not being held to ransom, that you end up not performing some of your key responsibility, but at the same time you are able to serve your people. We know that unions form part of you, and then how do you look at the prospect of you existing in such a way that you would not be wavered by the position of unions. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I will have a few. The first one for me will be, correct me if I'm wrong, but I was saying here it took you the whole year to appoint the project manager for you to take care of the buildings and all that work. Because that's a thing that has been constantly being reported to us up until the end of the financial year. Yes, I've heard that, I think you have made some steps, but are we saying for the whole year you couldn't appoint? And if it is so, what were the reasons for that? Secondly, when it comes to the issues of the agreement that needs to be signed, the QMS agreement, yes, you came here, you even told us some of the challenges or where you are in contention with labor, like these issues of powers to be given to the principal more than the SMT and all that. And you have just promised us that next week, or I don't know, but very soon, you are going to have a meeting where you believe the agreement will be signed. Have you found out those? What gives you so much hope that we can see you getting into agreement with the unions in the near future? Maybe you just go back to the areas where there were challenges, and then if you can just appraise us on the steps that you have taken to try and resolve them before even the meeting, so that we don't get the same report after next week's meeting. On the issue of the post-provisioning and the multi-term agreements that Limpopo is having, that is why it seems as if you did not achieve in all provinces, but for the explanation that we have got. So what are we having even other provinces now getting into multi-term agreement, or every year? What is happening around this issue of post-provisioning? How have you resolved the issue with other provinces so that we don't see these disputes in the near future? You know, I was very much interested in your partnership with SOMATFUCO. I don't even know whether I'm... Yeah, where you said it's written and writing for learners. What is it? What is that? It's one of the areas where we know as the department is lacking a lot as a country. So what agreement is that, and what is it that you do to assist the learners through that partnership? How does it get to schools where it is needed most? For now, let me just stop there
we'll take another round of questions after this. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I'll try and answer the questions in the sequence that they were asked. The first question was around page 22, what informs the figure that we have put there. Chair, at the beginning of each year, we have a bargaining workshop where parties will put on the management agenda, on the management plan, what items they would want to conclude for that particular year. So if on the management plan itself they have identified 11 issues, that's what we then take and we put it on the plan itself, because it's informed by the items that they shall have prioritized for the particular year. So hence we'll see us referring to the figures, saying that 8 out of 11 would have been concluded by the end of the financial year. Even the timing thereof is informed by such a management plan. For instance, if parties have put specific deadlines by when they shall have concluded bargaining on each item, would make an assessment to say, okay, by March they would have concluded 8 items, but the other items, they've put the later months of the year. Therefore, such items would fall in the next financial year. Chair, without necessarily sounding like a broken record, this is one of the reasons that has actually forced us to go and seek a legal opinion to say, to what an extent can you, as a bargaining council, dependent on the relationship between the two parties, which you do not have control over, how do you get to be measured out of the outcome of such discussions? That's one of the reasons, but I'll cover that question again. I'm just trying to link so that we see the relationship between the two, how it's difficult for us, unlike Umalusi or SAIS, to put objectives here that are dependent on that which is done by the administration. But we are putting objectives that are dependent on the outcome of an engagement between two parties will always have different interests. So we always go around and explain our operations in that context. Chair, to come to the other question, the monitoring of collective agreements. Chair, this is an aspect that we rely on provincial chambers to do for us. The issue around the utilization of 80 hours, it's an issue that can be monitored at a provincial level, specifically by the employer, because teacher development is driven by the employer. What the ELRC has provided for is in terms of the agreed time, to say out of the working time, 80 hours would be dedicated towards the issues around teacher development. So if the employer has put together a program to say they want to utilize that time for educators to be subjected to specific training programs, it's only then that would become aware of such a situation. Other than that, there is no way of us of compelling either the employer to ensure that they have programs in place utilizing that 80 hour that is agreed to in the form of a collective agreement. Chair, the issue around the figures, the World Teachers Day, the reason for this is because in the past, the ELRC was not driving any program in relation to World Teachers Day. But you would recall last year, during the tenure of the former chairperson, we had a national event convened in Durban, which was covered in the national media and so forth. So we had spent money in relation to that. For the first time in the previous year, we had not set aside any funding for such, because that was a program that was always driven by SAIS. But for the first time, there was a request from our parties to say, let the ELRC drive the process, because at that point in time, SAIS had indicated that they had financial constraints to run the program on their own. The issue around the escalation of costs related to the consultation. Chair, you will recall that we had reported previously that we had had a high vacancy rate due to the fact that there was a decision taken by the executive committee that we should not fill vacancies up until such time that there was work that was to be done by a service provider in the form of the work study job grading, which was going to inform the revision of our organogram. So the course related to consulting is specifically to that work that had to be undertaken by the service provider that subsequently informed our organogram being revised. Hence today we are reporting that we've been working very hard to populate the organogram, because now after having done that exercise, council was in a position to see which vacancies are critical and which vacancies should be filled as a matter of urgency, and which vacancies should be phased out from our organogram. The costing thereof is in relation to that. Chairperson, the issue around the IQMS, the explanation for the evaluation not having been performed, again, the ELRC concludes a collective agreement. The implementation of the agreement lies solely with the employer. Performance management is the responsibility of the employer. What the ELRC does in the form of monitoring the implementation, the ELRC requests the employer to provide the reports in the form of ELRC meetings. Now, whether educators have been assessed or not assessed, there's little that the ELRC can do in that regard, because performance management has to be driven by the employer. But in some instances, the explanations that have been brought forward is that during each term of evaluation, you would not have a situation where 52,000 educators will be present in the system, because you have educators who are on sick leave, you have educators who are suspended, you have educators who are on maternity leave. There's quite a number of reasons that would lead to you not being able to evaluate 52,000 out of 52,000. But in the main, we rely on the reports that are provided by the employer. The same explanation can be provided for the Eastern Cape, that if at the time when they presented the report at the provincial chamber, they had only assessed a certain number of educators because others were not in the system at that point in time due to a variety of reasons. Therefore, we accept that report because those will be the figures that have been evaluated. Chair, in terms of the question posed by Honorable Khoza, that the delisting the independency of the council versus the funding model, I start with the surplus. When we're showing the surplus, its symbol relates to the part of the budget that has not been utilized for the specific year. But when you are doing planning in terms of the MTEF projections, you then sit down and say, this is my income that is secured. Now, this income is fixed despite the inflation going up year in and year out. So it's not necessarily related to the surplus, because the surplus will not necessarily address your problems going forward. And we are saying, as of the periods that we are reporting, the council is in a good financial status, a healthy one. But however, when you do projections for the outer years to come, we are seeing a situation where our income is not going to be able to sustain the operations. So the surplus is only insofar as the underutilization for the specific year. If we have had a budget that is for 78 million that is approved, and out of that 78 million we spend 73, we'll always report the 5 million as the surplus, but it does not necessarily address the challenge that you have. Insofar as us wanting to obtain independence, Chair, we've been explaining this, that it was an anomaly for a bargaining council to be listed as a public entity, mainly because the LRA specifically defines what is a bargaining council. A bargaining council is an independent structure where parties to a bargaining council enjoy the same equal status. A public entity is an organ of state that reports to the executive authority, which is the minister. In this case, the minister, in the context of the ELRC, the minister is a party that enjoys the same equal status as the other parties, the unions. Now, where you are sitting with a situation where here are your equal parties seated around the table, but decisions of such equal parties in the context of the PFMA still have to be approved by an outsider who happens to be part of the same parties. So that's the contradiction that we are sitting with. That is why even in the public service at large, You have PSCBC, which is the umbrella bargaining council for all public service bargaining councils. The minister of DPSA is not the executive authority there, despite the minister being responsible for public administration. This issue is only applicable at the ELRC level. Having said that, Chairperson, let me tie it with the question of the non-appointment of the project manager. Why did it take 12 months or more than a year? Chair, the answer there is based on the fact that we are a public entity. We had a decision taken by the bargaining council itself, which involved all representatives from the state and the unions, that let's go and appoint a project manager. But because we had to comply with what is provided for in the PFMA, we had to await approval from the minister, which took 12 months for us to get the response. So we had a decision, but we could not implement the decision because the PFMA requires that we obtain another decision from the executive authority, and that decision took 12 months for us to get. So that is just one of the reasons that we can cite as an example of how a bargaining council cannot continue being a public entity. Chair, the question around incentives, what are we doing in terms of the management of incentives? Incentives, they are regulated in terms of the policy that was gazetted by the minister. It's not something that is a product of collective bargaining. The minister declared a policy, but because that policy is of interest to our parties, the little that we can do as a bargaining council is to monitor the implementation of such a policy. And where there are problems, we then make submissions to the departmental officials to say, take these areas to the minister for consideration, because quite frankly, the implementation of the policy is giving us an indication that there are areas that need to be revised. But such a revision is purely dependent on what the minister wants to see happening. So we only work with that insofar as monitoring how the policy is being implemented, because how that policy is implemented manifests itself in the disputes that are referred to ourselves, where educators are not happy with the manner in which the policy is implemented. They refer the disputes to ourselves. So that's why then we pay an interest to see that the policy is implemented as outlined there. You do not have a situation where Province A does something outside the policy itself, but there's little that we can do other than making such recommendations. Chair, the issue of appointment of temporal educators, again there, it's at the discretion of the employer, but because we are a stakeholder that has an interest in ensuring that there's stability in the context of labor peace, we always try and ensure that where there are discussions taking place at the level of the ELRC, being it a provincial level or national, but in this case this is a matter that affects the provincial chambers, Where there needs to be facilitation, we assist. In some provinces, we have seen quite a number of collective agreements that are concluded dealing with the same. But however, we take comfort now, as I said earlier on, that the amendments to the LRA are compelling us to have a national collective agreement that's going to regulate how the issue of temporal teachers is dealt with throughout the provinces. Chair, the issue of non-implementation of OSD, you would recall that OSD was a framework. It was a shopping list with all the nice to have and the things to be done to ensure that XYZ is achieved at the end. Now, what needed to happen was for us, parties within the LRC, to conclude collective agreement on the aspects of the framework that would have seen all those things that were envisaged in the 2008 collective agreement being implemented. And as such, to date, we are still dealing with such. We have not concluded discussions on ensuring that that which was envisaged in the framework itself is realized. That is why you would see that there will be these concerns from educators saying that what was envisaged in the agreement is that you would have accelerated progression and so forth, where educators will receive this and that. Those were just, that was just a framework of saying that this is what we envisage having in the context of education. And as such, if you recall, that agreement had number two, which talked to the process matters that had to be embarked upon, which was subsequent to the cost of living adjustments kind of a period, wherein you'd say each year, where there's a cost of living adjustment increase, you increase the ELRC levies by 50 cents, which can be affordable by both parties. So we're looking at a proposal that can talk to such. Again, the trends from the Auditor General's findings, Mr. Ngobeni will talk to such. The employee wellness programs that are reflected in our provincial reports, Chairperson, refer to the programs that are run by the provincial departments for their employees, meaning the educators, if they have HIV counseling sessions and so forth. Those are the reports that they present to us as the LRC to say for the financial year they've run so many employee wellness programs as the department for the educators. So it's not necessarily for the ELRC staff. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you so much, Chairperson, and honourable members. In response, I think I'll start from where we're sitting as the audit committee. I think the one thing that is bothering us at the moment is what stands between us and clean audit. We had a number of unqualified audit opinion to date, and then we have not managed to cross the bridge. But again, it will talk to the issues that were raised. Number one, if you look at the honourable member raised the issue in our report on the issues around the internal audit work, together with the Auditor General's report. If you read the two together, it's around the performance of information. And in the main, I think from the Auditor General's side, they've acknowledged that in their own report, that there has been some movement. However, it's a journey. I think the chair and the GS have highlighted some of the interventions that have been put in place to be able to improve. It also talks to the recurring nature and the trends, Chairperson. If you want to compare paragraph per paragraph from the previous year, there has been a vast improvement. So from our side, what we have managed to put in place as the audit committee, together with management, the AG Action Plan. I think the Honourable Member, that's what she was referring to, the AG Action Plan. That and on its own is part of our standing item in our quarterly meetings. We're giving an opinion in terms of the adequacy part of that action plan and whether they are adhering to the recommendation and implementing them. So in the main, from where we're sitting, we are not aiming for anything less than a clean audit in the near future. The other issue, Chair, pretty much. No, I'll leave that to management for commitment. From our side, we can only recommend, Chairperson. The other issues on the policy side, at the time of the audit, the internal audit work, the policy was not in existence. However, it again talks to the effectiveness and how serious they take our work. They adhered to our recommendation, and I can safely say those policies are in place at the moment. Thank you so much.
General Secretary, I'm puzzled by your response. You said the employee wellness premium is for the provinces. Why the meeting is adjourned? Thank you. Remember, members, we are still meeting tomorrow, so don't go to the airport and leave. Come again, Mashaban. Where did you hear that from? Did you get any message saying the meeting is postponed for tomorrow? Llewellyn, where is that? Llewellyn, why did you send a message to Honourable Mashaban? No. It's not postponed. Let us meet. Neither. Please, Honourable Members, let us meet at 9 tomorrow, not 9:30 for us to finish earlier. Please. 9. Yes, 9. The venue
for tomorrow? honourable members, let me even hold assembly. Members, let me prepare you for tomorrow's meeting. It is old, it is at old assembly chamber, and you know what does that mean. It means you must come prepared. There are cameras. You will be on national TV for tomorrow. Oh, yeah, no, it's fine. Come prepared. You'll be on national TV. But it might change. But fine, let us do this.
Thank you.